And we are broadcasting live inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House inside of Bridgestone Arena on this Thursday. Welcome into Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is great to be with you. Nick Kale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason coming up in a little bit, Chase McCabe, the whole crew with you here at Bridgestone Arena with big games ahead and internal reinforcements on the way. We are all predsed up. A lot of interesting news and notes in the last, 17, 18 hours regarding your Nashville Predators. Braden Gall, it looks like some of the studs are on their way up, a veteran presence on his way back soon as we get ready for a couple of big home games here in Smashville.
Yeah, I think that the most of this week was going to feel like a focus on the trade deadline, on does this team have enough to win a cup? Did the teams around them, do they feel like they have enough to win a cup? What do those teams do around David Poile and the Nashville Predators? And a lot of the conversation on this program and internally with all of us, and particularly myself, because I'm largely obsessed with this young prospect, Eli Tolvanen, the reports are now, of course, that it appears he will be coming to Nashville at some point near the end of the season when his KHL season ends. His team has been eliminated from the Olympics, so he's going back to his KHL team, which is the second best league in the world, by the way. Let's be very clear. I think lost in this conversation is that the KHL is the second best, second most talented league in the entire world, and that he had the greatest rookie season in the history of that league. He then dominated the Olympics, second only to Erik Lindros. As a player of his age in terms of point total in an Olympic run. So we're talking about every step of his career, first-round draft pick who fell. Even on draft night, we thought this was a steal of a draft pick, and nobody could have foreseen this. But it sounds like he will be joining the Nashville Predators as a reinforcement later on this year. That's probably close to near the end of March for him. We're talking about Mike Fisher at the beginning of March. So you're looking at this roster with two really interesting different pieces joining this roster in the last month of the season, and none of them cost the Predators a single thing, and that is a really exciting aspect to this whole situation.
So March Madness is going to be heating up on college basketball's hardwood, but we've got our own March Madness going on, as you said. Fisher in the beginning of the month, Ely at the end of the month, and you look at this team right now, and I think you made a good point. They can bring in fresh blood, a veteran that's rested, the KHL's biggest star. They didn't have to give up anything. They don't have to go outside of the organization and worry about a ton of chemistry issues or anything like that. That just goes to show you how well this franchise is clicking right now and how they're operating at really peak efficiency.
And Chase, want to give credit to the reports. Who did the reporting on all of this? Want to make sure we're giving credit to the guys who broke these stories and sort of are indicating that this is happening.
Craig Custance from The Athletic was the first to have it and had some quotes in there from various people, including Predators assistant general manager Paul Fenton. And I think the organization is very, you know, quick to say, look, nothing's 100%. We're ready for it. But, you know, you have all these reports coming out. Now, I do want to say, while you have Mike Fisher joining the team, you have the reports that Eli Tolvanen will join the team, I'm still not convinced that they don't do something. Now, if it's the right move and they're not giving up a lot, they still might do something, because David Poile is going to be extra prepared for a long playoff run. Because if you watch the standings as closely as all of us do, you will see that there's a possibility you play a team like the Anaheim Ducks in the first round, they're going to beat you up. I mean, we've seen that over the last 2 years, so you need to be ready for that.
But there's a difference in being aggressive and improving your team as opposed to desperation. The Preds are not in the situation where they have to be desperate
and
mortgage the future. I mean, they're almost in a position of dealing from luxury, if you will. So you got to feel good about that.
Yeah, and I think the only piece is at this point, if we're to assume Mike Fisher comes back and probably slides in as that third or fourth line centerman, let's say, just kind of a broad stroking it, Eli Tolvanen comes in and plays probably a scoring winger role on the third line. He doesn't strike me as a guy who's automatically going to take Craig Smith's spot. So you probably think best case scenario for him somewhere on that third line, because the fourth line is, you want maybe a little different attitude out of that fourth line. You maybe put him in that third line. So let's say those things happen. What it really means to me is I do not want to see anything outside of Pontus Aberg and a first-round draft pick used in any trade period. That's it. Those are the only two commodities I'd like to see used. If David Poile's going to do something, I almost will say no to anything that involves more than those two pieces. If it's I would love to see Pontus Aberg have the opportunity to flourish and grow in this organization, in this town. I think he's got some ability. I would love to see it. But he's the one piece you can look at another team and say, listen, there's some upside here. There's some talent here. Are you willing to take him as part of a pot sweetener deal with this first-round draft pick for a rental player? That what it does to me now is all these feelings we all had, all the good feels about Eli Tolvanen, and oh my God, it's all real. It's all very real. If there's a chance he's called up and used legitimately, and people inside the organization are saying that, then what it means is that his talent's very real. They believe it's very real, and that he can contribute. That means I don't want to see any other real pieces moved.
I agree with that.
You got Fisher, you got Tolvanen. Those are two free chips you're getting essentially at the trade deadline or just after. What I want to see, like, if they use anything other than Pontus Aberg and a first-round draft pick to acquire anything at all, it will be hard to look at it as, in the moment, as, man, I really love that move.
Yeah.
That means Austin Watson shouldn't be going anywhere.
No.
Well, and I never think he was.
Right, but you see what I'm saying? Like, it's – if you see the headline and the ticker comes across and it says Austin Watson, we're all going, oh, gosh, that's
yeah, no.
I don't know about that. Well, if it's Pontus Aberg and a first-round pick, we're all going, okay, I like that. That's interesting. Let me see what they got.
Yeah, and I don't think you move Dante Fabbro. You know, his name's been thrown around. He's one of the top prospects in the organization. I don't think you look at him. Now, one thing that's intriguing to me, you know, I brought up Gustav Nyquist with the Detroit Red Wings. He's got a year left on his contract. To me, now, I don't know what the Red Wings would want in return. That could be a situation where if you were to offer a Pontus Aberg, I think Aberg would then go and get a lot of playing time with a rebuilding Detroit team. He could possibly be a part of that future and that rebuild there. So maybe that's something that you look at in making a move. And then you got a guy that's still on your team for another year and has a chance at a run. But all this changes some things. I think that if you're a betting man, then you're probably leaning more towards they're not going to make a trade. But as I said, I wouldn't be shocked if he tries to find one more piece if it's the right fit.
All right, so we got some really good audio for you. I'm going to roll a couple of these pieces of audio out for you right now. Andrew Berkshire of Sportsnet last night on Preds Insiders with Ryan Porth. Take a listen. Here is his thoughts on whether or not Fish and Tolvanen are enough for the Preds.
I think that you're – considering how good the Predators are, you're probably a little bit disappointed they don't add, but they are good enough to go far with that lineup. You know, Tolvanen, who knows how good he could be right now. He's putting up unbelievable rookie numbers that the KHL has never seen before for a teenager. So that's, you know, something special that they could add to the lineup. Mike Fisher, it really depends on what kind of player he is after missing, you know, three quarters of a season. That's really up in the air. And whether or not he ends up, you know, sometimes with veterans, coaches like to give them a bit more ice time than they necessarily should have. With Mike Fisher coming back, he should be the fourth line center. So if he ends up forcing less ice time to guy like Cal Yarncroke, I think that's probably a net negative. But, you know, it's probably good to just have that center depth. They'll probably still have a good run if they don't add. You know, most teams, they don't necessarily need to add in the playoff run anyway. Deadline deals are usually a little bit overrated. But as, like, if you're a fan of the team, you probably want to see them go all in while they have all these great guys under contract. So it'd be, like, until the end of the Ellis contract.
A couple of interesting thoughts off that. One, who does take the hit in ice time when Mike Fisher comes back is an interesting conversation. I don't think Cal Yarncroke is the name that I would put money on.
No.
It feels like either Salamaki or Aberg would lose that time. You move Sissons and Yarncroke to the wing and they just play exclusively there and then get used in center situations maybe from spot start or spot duty there. So I don't that part doesn't concern me. I think Fisher's an upgrade on Salamaki and Aberg. And I think interesting that just trade deadline – an interesting sort of generic thought there that trade deadline pieces, trade deadline moves are a little overrated. I think that's the difference with David Poile's track record is his trade deadline deals aren't like, hey, I'm going to go get the rental. That's not what he really does.
Right.
Now, in the past, he's maybe done that, but in the last 5 years, it's been, I'm going to give you Seth Jones, and you're going to give me Ryan Johansson. I know the Shea Weber, PK Subban deal didn't happen at the deadline. It happened in the offseason, but – you know, he doesn't just, like, throw spaghetti on the wall or whatever at the deadline to sort of like add a piece to win a cup.
I mean, he gave his top prospect for Kyle Turris.
He makes huge moves. Like, he makes big moves, and they are long-term moves. So I don't – to me, that's what makes David Poehl maybe different than the traditional deadline move. That's sort of why I'm a little anti making the rental player move, is because it is such a short-term thing, even though it feels like the cup is sitting right in front of him this year.
615-737-1025 is the number. 615-737-1025. All right, let's get to the stupid poll question of the day, because I think we have a really, really good one coming up for today's show.
Yeah, so this happened to me actually this morning. I was on the way in, and I stopped at a fast food place to get some breakfast, and I paid with cash, because a lot of times, you know, early in the morning, they clear the credit card machine, it's cash only. And
really?
So, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yep. So, you just learned something. There you go. The more you know. So, I paid with a $5 bill. My total was $3.71, and the lady gives me back $4, and I'm like, well, clearly this is not right.
So, you made an extra $2.29.
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. Math.
That's a profitable morning.
Right. So I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, well, this isn't right. So I wait and I say, hey, ma'am, you have given me more than you should have. And, you know, of course she was thankful and it was just a couple of bucks, but to me it was the right thing to do. So I, you know, gave her the money back, went on about my day. And I'm sitting in a red light about to pull into the arena, and I'm thinking, how many people would actually do that?
Not very many.
Not very many.
No,
so that's our poll question. If you were given, you know, an excess amount of change, do you give it back?
All right, let's get it up at 1025_MD. I've got some thoughts on that. We'll get into that on the other side. But when we come back,
I have 13 questions.
You have 13 questions? Is that exactly? Is that exact?
No. I have a questions.
Okay.
All right, so when we come back, last night, Roman Josi with some very interesting things to say on Smashville Live with Braden Gall and Hal Gill. You'll hear from him when we come back. It is Morning Drive. We are broadcasting live inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, inside of Bridgestone Arena on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive on this Thursday on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House, inside of Bridgestone Arena. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason coming up in a little bit. Chase McCabe, we're all here hanging out till 10 o'clock. 615-737-1025 is the number. We will give you the exact wording of the poll question in a couple of minutes, but let's hear from Roman Josi last night with Braden Gall and Hal Gill on Smashville Live talking about Eli Tolvanen.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a really good player. I haven't seen him live yet, but I watched some games in the Olympics, and he looks unbelievable, and people are talking really highly of him, and I heard he's an awesome player, and I think he would definitely be good for our team.
Now, what was the reaction to... Was this report, because I know it came out yesterday in the afternoon, was that kind of making the rounds at Smashville Live and getting people excited?
It really wasn't, but yeah, I think you could tell that the players, and here's the thing, I would assume that conversations within the locker room are well ahead of conversations in the media.
Of course.
So if there is a report from an actual Preds executive saying this is a very real possibility that is probably going to happen, I would assume that the coaching staff, the scouting department, David Poehl, even the leadership committee have all been in on conversations about this in some way, shape, or form. So he clearly had an answer ready to go. I mean, they've clearly watched him. They've studied him. They've been dissecting him just like they would scout a player on another team. So I think he was very clearly aware of what this young prospect has accomplished. I don't know how many 27-year-old captains of first-place teams are watching their prospects in their farm system.
True.
But basically, if you just kind of step back and think about that scenario, and for him to be able to say, yeah, we've watched him as players, and to see what type of, you know, talent he is, I think indicates that even the players are prepared to see a little bit of Eli Tolvanen this year, which is exciting because, I mean, there's not many – you know, every cup has the old guy you want to win a cup for, and every now and then you get these young 18-year-old, 19-year-old kids that come up and score a couple of goals in the postseason, you know, and whatever. That's an exciting thing. That's a fun, exciting thing for Predators fans to look forward to.
And I think the thing that's really great about this whole situation is he's a young, talented prospect, but he's not being asked to come in and be the face of the franchise or save the season or anything like that. This is a team that you could make the case for right now. Maybe they don't need anything. I mean, maybe that's optimistic thinking, but you could say,
I'm with you.
We could hold off, but you know what? He can come in, and there's not a lot of pressure on him to be something more than he has to be at this point in his career.
Well, and I'm not trying to, you know, be negative by any means. I'm just looking at last year and the run that they made and trying to be realistic because, look, the Stanley Cup playoffs are probably the most trying and, you know, take a toll on your body more than any other sport because they last so long and they're so physical, and especially when you go up against a team like the Anaheim Ducks that plays that physical game. I mean, you're going to get guys hurt. You're going to get guys banged up. So I think that what David Poile looked at is, you know, I don't want to be in a situation where if I lose a Ryan Johansson or a Kevin Fiala or a Mike Fisher, you know, in the playoffs that you know, we're going to have to rely on, and he did a great job, but Freddie Gaudreau and players like that. Colton Sissons, of course, elevated his game. I mean, there were some great stories that came from all of that, but I think he wants to be better prepared, and that's why you look at bringing Tolvanen in, Mike Fisher returning, why you look at a possible trade. So I think he is just making sure that all his I's are dotted and T's are crossed before the deadline and before the playoff run.
All right, take a listen to Roman Josi last night with Braden and Hal talking about the level of comfort inside the room.
Yeah, I'm definitely comfortable. I think there's still areas to improve, but yeah, we have 20 games left, or what, 24 games left, and you want to make sure you peak towards the end, but I'm really confident in our group. I think we have a great group of guys. First of all, we have a great team chemistry, and a lot of talent, and I think throughout the regular season there's some games obviously you want to always play at your best, but I think we've been pretty consistent all year.
And it almost just feels like when you look at the timeline of the way things are kind of falling into place here, that the stars are starting to align. They've won two games in a row. They've kind of snapped out of that dog day of February fatigue thing. Mm-hmm. They've got a couple of big games coming up. Then you get the news and the report about, you know, the young stud's going to be coming up at the end of the month. Your veteran captain type leadership guy is coming in just a few games. It all seems like it's just kind of flowing the right way as we approach the deadline.
Well, and here's the thing about this team. You know, that all that's great, and they are aware of it. You know, they hear the chatter, but you know, for lack of better words, they don't care about that right now. All they're focused on is what they're doing and the games that they're playing and how they're playing as a team. Now, will they welcome the additions of Fisher and Tolvanen? Sure. But then you also have guys, you know, in the bottom six that are like, okay, well, that's great, but I'm going to lose my spot. So they're elevating their game. They're worried about their game. So I think there are different levels of emotion going through the room right now, but none of it's going to be bad in the end.
Well, and the bottom line is think about how many different types of lineups Peter Laviolette used in the playoffs last year, where you saw Harry Zolnarchuk and Mika, you saw these guys play in the first round that didn't even get touched the ice in the second round. Then you had guys like Fiedler and Parenteau and McLeod who didn't play at all in the first series that you need in a series mm-hmm. against St. Louis and Anaheim because they're so physical. Right now, if you take Pontus Aberg and Mika Salamaki out of the starting lineup and put Mike Fisher in, you still don't have room for Eli Tolvanen. There's still not a spot. The point is you've got these three pieces. Let's call it Tolvanen, Aberg, assuming they don't make a trade, and Salamaki. Those are the three the bench pieces you have. Those are really reliable depth pieces that you feel comfortable with sliding in based on matchup, based on line combinations, based on injury. That's what you need is a couple of those pieces. That's without making a single trade. That's if you're playing a speed game, all of a sudden you can throw Pontus Aberg in there in a line situation with Tolvanen. If you're playing a bigger, more physical game, and this is what I like about this team and why I think Austin Watson isn't going anywhere, because that's the one area if you're trying to look at this team and say, where is it that they just – there's that little – what do they really need to sort of complete the puzzle? And it might be, unfortunately, that Cody McLeod type of player who's maybe a little bit more skilled who can play in a postseason run, because there's not really a place for a Cody McLeod in a postseason team. That's where Austin Watson has to play a big role. And frankly, the guy I think is going to play that role as well is Mike Fisher. Mike Fisher is
– you're forgetting one.
One of the things that Roman Josi and Hal Gill talked a lot about last night was how hard Mike Fisher hits and how physical mm-hmm. he is. And some people kind of, because he's this nice, quiet guy, I think people forget that he is a, that guy is a brick you-know-what. And and he is going to come in and knock some heads around. And they need that sort of physical edge and attitude, especially if they get matched up with a team like Anaheim in the first round.
All right, Preds fans, here's the question at 615-737-1025. Is Tolvanen and Fisher enough, or do you want to see the franchise make another move outside of the organization before the deadline? 615-737-1025.
There are four guys, in my opinion, on this team right now, or about to be on this team, that play that physical game, but they also add some scoring. Mike Fisher, of course, is probably at the top of the list. But Austin Watson, I mean, we have seen him be in front of the net. He's poking at home. He's scoring goals. He jokes in the locker room that, you know, like, hey, scoring, I got the scoring prowess now. Alexi Emelin is one of those guys as well. And then Scott Hartnell. You can't forget Scott Hartnell. I mean, he's a guy that is not afraid.
Hartnell's gotten a few fights this year.
Yes, but that's, you know, if you can have four of those guys that can, and three out of the four can add a little bit of scoring as well, I think that you're fine in that aspect.
I don't think you can – yeah, I agree with you on the Emelin angle. He's the guy that can come in and knock some heads around. I don't think you're going to get any goal scoring
from Alexi Emelin.
But he's certainly not a Yannick Weber type of player. You know what I mean? Yannick Weber is certainly the other style of defensive player. So, I mean, listen, they've got the two old guys that you want to win the cup. You got the goaltender and the backup goaltender. You got a coach who's been to the cup a bunch of times. You got a ton of scoring talent on the top of this lineup. You've got some of that physical presence. Oh, by the way, your physical presence on the fourth line is a former first-round pick mm-hmm. in Austin Watson. This is not a there's some pedigree there with him. There's really not a weakness. You bring in a couple of extra young depth pieces, there's not really a weakness.
615-737-1025. You can also follow us on Twitter at 1025_MD. Josh, let's make it official. What is the official poll question of the day?
Now, the stupid poll question of the day.
All right, Chase, what do we got?
You can vote at 1025_MD. What do you do when given extra change after buying something? Very simple. Do you keep it or do you return it? So far in the early going, we've had this up for just a few minutes. 51% say return it. 49% say keep it. And Bob on Twitter says, ridicule the millennial for not being able to count.
I appreciate that, but you never know. It might not have been a millennial.
Yes. It comes down to how much you get back, right?
To me, that's what it is. It's about the amount of money. If it's less than, I don't know, if it's less than 20, let's say it's less than a 20, and the drawer, because that person's going to take some heat from a manager if the drawer's off, right? Like, whatever cashier does this is going to take some heat if the drawer's off, and you certainly don't want that. If it's less than, and it's the right thing to do no matter how many dollars it is. So we're talking about a bunch of selfish humans right now, but myself included. If it's less than like 10 bucks, 15 bucks, then I'm probably going to keep it. If it's anything more than that, then what they could get in serious trouble, and you're good fortune. I will say this, though. There's probably a, you know, a change, you know, karmic balance out there where – like, we all get a little extra change sometimes, and sometimes we get ripped off. Every now and then you go and you give somebody a 20, and they give you change like you gave them a 10, right? Like, you're supposed to get $13 back, and you get 3. Like, it's happened. Mm-hmm. We've all been shortchanged, literally.
Yeah.
In the checkout process, we've all been shortchanged from time to time. So I think if you keep a couple bucks here or there, it's probably just keeping the karmic balance of the change universe going.
If they give you a couple of extra dollars back, it's not going to change your life one way or the other, so I probably would give it back just because it's the right thing. It's always the right thing to do. But, man, if he made, like, a major mistake and, like, I'm a broke radio host, I'm poor radio guy, and all of a sudden an extra $80. You know what? I think,
yeah,
that's your mistake.
That guy's in deep trouble, though.
Yeah, I still give it back.
Well, it's just I like being the extra, a poor radio host.
To me, the extra $3 or $4 is sort of just like, yeah, I worked hard today. I earned that.
Karma works both ways.
Yeah, I do believe.
Yeah,
what I told you when we were coming in. Like, if you give that back, I believe that something good will happen back to you.
Yeah, and if you keep the $80.
Lindsey Vonn's going to go on a date with
me. If you
now.
Keep the $80, like, you're not due for a good. Like, if you keep the $80, you're never going to get extra change ever again the rest of your life.
$80, that's like two rounds of golf. I've got golf for the first two weekends of the month. I don't have to go to the wife asking for, you know, $40.
By the way, great great Muni courses here in Nashville. You'll figure that out.
Exactly.
But also, you have to ask a wife for $40?
I got to ask her for every dollar.
Okay. Right. That's another subject.
That's why I do all the financing.
I have to let her know when I'm going through the drive-thru for a coffee.
Wow.
It's that
like
tight.
Like, send a text message like, hey, can I get a
Can
I get a venti this morning, or just do I have to get a grande?
Like, yeah, just so you know. $285 out of the checking account.
My relationship works very differently.
I'm envious.
I'll be checking the bank account, and I'll be like, huh, Chipotle today, huh?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, you know the baby. That's bad for the baby, right?
615-737-1025. We've got some interesting NFL stuff coming up, but when we come back, college basketball was front and center last night. I'll give you two or three really big takeaways that I think are going to play out this upcoming March. It's Morning Drive on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Oh, yeah, you hear that? Yep, March Madness coming. Can't wait. 615-737-1025, Morning Drive. We are broadcasting live from Jack Daniel's Barrel House inside of Bridgestone Arena. Josh is back in studio. The Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc., Mount Juliet, Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe, Derek Mason will be along in a little bit. Let's get some phone calls in here, and then we will get to the college basketball from last night. A couple of big takeaways from a handful of good games, and we say good morning to Catfish Jake. What's going on, Jake?
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, I just want to chime in on the David Boyle needing to make a move or not. I think he shows his genius right now more than ever that he's in a spot where if he wants to make a move, he can. But if he doesn't want to make a move and trade away a pick, he doesn't have to. If a sweetheart deal pops up and he wants to trade a pick for a player, he can. But he can also just stay with the team he has now, and they're a bunch of studs and put him out on the ice and have a chance to win it all. So I think he's just showing once again how he's the best GM in the league.
Yeah, he's really dealing from a position of power at this point.
Oh, absolutely. And this, you never want to give up a high draft pick, but if there's ever a time to do it, this team is so good and so young that he could give away a draft pick now to rent a player for a year that they think could get him over the top. But at the same time, he could also just say no. This is my team. I'm putting him on the ice. Let's go win this thing. So, I mean, he's in an absolute power position.
Yeah, and Catfish, I'll see you Sunday, buddy. But I think what's interesting is how, again, a big part of all of this is how young and locked up the majority of the core of this roster is. That's where a first-round pick, you kind of go, you know, the first-round pick doesn't mean nearly as much because you've got, you know, like your seven best players locked up long-term. Like, you don't need – or your 12 best players locked up long-term. You don't need, you know, somebody to step in the next 2 years as a first-round pick and play. Like, you just don't need that.
You know what David Poile is right now? David Poile is a guy at a poker table, right? And it's a tournament, and there's about eight guys in the tournament at the table, and he's sitting there with the second biggest chip stack. He's sitting down looking at pocket kings. He is in a position of power. He might not have pocket aces and be in the chip lead, but he's got a ton of chips right now, and he is feeling very confident where he's sitting. And that's just the way you look at this team right now, and you got to feel good about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's go to Will, who's next. Will, you're on Morning Drive. What's up, Will?
Hey, just clarifying a couple things on your poll question.
Mm-hmm.
If I understood you correctly, the real question was if they give you the wrong change back or you're making money off of it, that the question is, do you give it back or do you keep it?
Right. Yeah, Chase, explain what happened.
Yeah, so somebody gave me an excess amount of change this morning. I gave them
a couple bucks.
Yeah, a couple bucks. It was about $2 extra, and I returned it. So that's the question.
Okay. I'm old school, and I learned if it wasn't your money to begin with, you're stealing from somebody.
Exactly. That's how I go. That's how I look at it.
So, and conversely, if they give you the wrong change back where they're shortchanging you, you should also have already figured out how much money you should be getting back. So it's kind of on you if you let them shortchange you.
I agree. Well, I agree with
that
part.
I agree with that.
And you're not stealing from somebody. You're stealing from a massive multi-billion dollar corporation.
Well, still.
So, okay,
stealing is stealing.
So, $2!
So now let's add a little spin-off to this question.
They're stealing years off your life for going and eating there every morning.
If it happens at a major corporation, like you said, big-time drive-through, or it happens at a little mom-and-pop place, does it change your mindset as opposed to the big company that couldn't care less about $5
or the
guy that's making $50,000 for
the
year?
Well, clearly I'm the good person here, and I've given back to the multi-million dollar corporation.
You are
so.
I'm going to refrain from making a joke.
But see, okay.
You are very clearly the most morally upstanding human on this show right
now.
But
let me bring this close to home. It doesn't matter if it's a multi-million dollar corporation or mom and pop. My dad's family had restaurants forever. I grew up in the restaurant business.
Were you a busboy?
I was everything.
I could see you being a busboy.
I was cheap labor. Yep. I was everything. And so I know how hard it is to run a business. I know that every penny counts. And so that is why, you know, I do it. And, you know, I've always tipped well because I know they don't make a lot in serving. So
that's a totally different conversation.
We're right. But what I'm saying is, you know, I've seen this firsthand. You know, I've seen people, you know, like somebody accident, you know, we've had people that have worked for us that have given the wrong change and they don't get it back and the drawer's off. And, you know, so I have been through all of that stuff. So that's why I'm very cognizant of it.
Well, and tipping, for example, like a totally different conversation for me. I think every human being should work in the service industry at least once.
Oh, yeah.
I waited tables for like 7 years in college. And if you don't have those experiences, I mean, you're better off for being in those industries because you learn how to treat people. You learn all kinds of stuff. But I totally look at it differently. If I'm going to a little shop where they live upstairs, you know, like it's a couple, I go where I buy flowers and where I buy my breakfast food or whatever is local community shops that are owned by someone who's up at 2 a.m. cooking in their own house to make the kolaches for people or selling flowers out of the first floor of their house. I do look at that a little bit differently, but I get it. Technically, it's stealing. I get it. Whatever.
615-737-1025. Whatever.
It's $2. I don't know. If somebody gives me $100, somebody might get fired for that. I'm going to give it back. You know.
Stupid poll question of the day is up right now at 1025_MD. Follow along. Vote on Twitter at 1025_MD. Don't forget, coming up 7:30 this morning, we've got coffee with the coach. Predators head coach Peter Laviolette will join us in just about 45 minutes, so stick around for that. And when we come back, college basketball, three things really stood out to me last night. I promise we'll get to them next, two of which I think have a legit chance of making the Final Four. That's coming up next on Morning Drive. We're inside of Jack Daniel's Barrel House on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back into Morning Drive on this Thursday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick, Braden, D-Mace, Chase, all of us here hanging out. Derek Mason will be coming up in just a little bit. 615-737-1025. We'll get to some NFL draft conversation coming up in just about 15 minutes. Don't forget tonight, the Preds and the Sharks right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game as we are inside of Bridgestone Arena doing the show this morning. But last night, Braden Gall, a lot of college basketball. It was really a great night to take in hoops with an off night with the Pucks. You got Carolina-Syracuse. You had Alabama-Auburn, Tennessee-Florida, Duke and Louisville. Let me give you two quick opinions on a couple of games last night. I want to see what you think about this. First of all, North Carolina goes into Syracuse last night, 28,000 inside the Carrier Dome. Carolina wins. Not that I was surprised that they won because they were the better team. They're number 10 in the country. But you look at what this team is doing right now, I think they are Final Four bound once again. Joel Berry, Luke May, Pinson, they don't have a ton of next-level, jump-off-the-page talent, but they've got college basketball players.
No, offensively, they're not nearly what they were in the last two seasons, but they are a lot of really experienced. There's a lot of tournament games on this roster with those guys that you're talking about there. So, but you're right. It's not, they don't have the one-and-done sort of elite-level Kentucky Duke guy, but there's a lot of pieces there. I need to see it on the glass. I need to see it on offense. They're a really good team, but they, to me, are no different than all these other teams that we're looking at going, yeah, I think that team can make a deep run, or yeah, that team could lose in the first weekend. Like, it's just, it seems like they're every other, like, you know, Syracuse is under 500 in the ACC. They're a decent team, but to go on the road in that atmosphere, it looked like a great atmosphere last night in the Carrier Dome. So I'm not ready to go Final Four yet for North Carolina, but it's going to depend on the matchups for me because they're a consistently experienced, good quality basketball team. I just don't know if they've got elite level talent.
Luke May kind of reminds me of a poor man's Tyler Hansbrough, the way he plays his game. And then you look at a guy like Joel Berry, who was the most outstanding player in a tournament last year when the Tar Heels won the national championship. And you look at him this year, and it's, you know, he's not a guy that's just going to blow you away, but it's kind of like that Chris Duhon quarterback point guard. He just finds a way to lead and win.
He's a great free throw shooter, but, 6 of 17 last night, so you missed 11 shots. Not a very efficient night for him from the floor. But, I just can't tell if – Duhon had some really, really good moments. Bryce Johnson was the reason they won a title. You know, there's like, I'm not sure where he falls actually, Barry, on the list of great North Carolina point guard. That's a good team. It's a good team. I still think we need to see more out of them before I start saying Final Four, though.
And this was interesting last night. Alabama plays Auburn, and Auburn loses Macklemore to an injury about a week ago. Their top scorer last night was out with flu-like conditions, so Auburn only had 7 scholarship players active against Alabama last night. They were still a 7.5-point favorite, and Alabama had been playing pretty well, and they just blew the doors off of them early and won by almost 20 points.
Yeah, and Alabama cut it to, I want to say, like 6 or 7 with about 10 minutes to go, maybe made it look like a game at that point, and then Auburn just pulled away, ended up winning by 19. They're clearly the best team in the SEC right now, and I think deserving of the one seed in the regular season championship as we're getting closer to them clinching that. And I don't know if I'm buying it in the NCAA tournament, but at this stage, I haven't seen, again, give me Villanova, give me Duke, give me Michigan State, Purdue and Virginia you could throw into that mix. There's just not a lot of teams where I go, man, that team is almost guaranteed to make it to the second weekend. It's just a very interesting year in NCAA basketball, and I think that's going to lead to a really great tournament because it's so sneaking wide open right now.
So right now you only see 3 or 4 teams that you feel very confident that you would invest in and back to make a deep run?
Yeah, I said it yesterday. I'm going to stick with it. I think if Villanova and Michigan State are on opposite end of the bracket, those are the two teams that I trust the most as far as talent, coaching, experience. You put all those things together, those are the two teams that I trust the most. Virginia still has yet to get it done in the tournament, even though they're an incredible defensive team. And frankly, that's one thing about this whole year is that, let's say of the top 20 teams in college basketball, you have a lot of those teams are very one-dimensional, either really, really great on offense or really, really great on defense. There's not many teams that are both, and that's what's really interesting about this tournament. And I look at teams like Michigan State and Villanova, who I think will be – Phil Booth will come back for Villanova. I think those two young players for Michigan State in Bridges and Jackson are going to get even better as they get closer to the tournament. I think they'll be playing their best basketball going into the tournament. So that, to me, again, it's a coach, player, experience combo triangle, and Villanova, Michigan State, and Duke sort of have all of that. Duke I would put from a talent perspective above everybody. That's if Bagley's playing at his highest level.
Yeah, I feel really confident right now in North Carolina, not just for making a push to the Final Four, but just with conference tournament play. I know Duke and Virginia are ahead of them in the ACC, but I like Carolina right now, and I'm still very impressed by Auburn. I still think they could be a total X factor and wild card in the tournament. Duke-Louisville last night, no Marvin Bagley, no problem. Duke's rolling, and it doesn't seem like they're going to slow down anytime soon.
And teams that nobody are paying attention to, Texas Tech and Clemson, for example, we joked about it yesterday, like what would the ratings be if a teams like Clemson and Texas Tech are making the Final Four? They both get beat last night, both of which on the road. Virginia Tech actually building itself quite the resume. They've got a lot of nice wins. They're probably going to get into the tournament right now. And then, of course, Tennessee beating Florida yesterday at home, taking care of business. And so, listen – this is what Rick Byrd said yesterday on the show about MTSU, for example. They can't afford a home loss. You just can't afford home losses right now. And so if you're Texas Tech and you lose on the road to Oklahoma State, okay, it's not a great loss, but it's on the road. It's excusable. Same thing with Clemson last night. You go on the road, you lose to Virginia Tech. It's excusable. So I think you can lose some road games. Beating Florida at home is just one of those sort of, all right, putting a stamp on second place in the SEC. What is going to turn out to be, I think, regardless of what happens in the tournament, a really, really good season for Rick Barnes and the Tennessee Volunteers.
615-737-1025 if you want to get in on the college basketball discussion. It's funny, I was checking my email yesterday, and I got the email from the NCAA. We got our media credential for the first 2 rounds of the tournament with it being in Nashville. So let me ask you this. When we talk about what would be best for this city, and I know we're going to get into...
Oh, I love this conversation.
Later in the hour, next hour, we're going to get to some NFL draft stuff with the NFL draft possibly coming to Nashville, but March Madness is coming up first. What would be the most appealing draw for this market, obviously besides the Vols?
So you got Charlotte, Pittsburgh, San Diego, Wichita, Dallas. So, Duke going to Charlotte makes sense. Right now, if you go to Bracketology on ESPN, which is a couple of days old, it's not up to date. You've got Auburn, Louisville, Creighton, and UC Santa Barbara in one pod. I think Louisville and Auburn would be a great draw for this city. I think they would be really excited about that. The other Nashville one is Kentucky, North Carolina. Charleston, and then a play-in game. So if you told me that Auburn, Louisville, Kentucky, and North Carolina
oh my God.
Are coming to Bridgestone Arena, I think the folks that are at the Nashville Sports Council, the folks who run Bridgestone Arena, of course, the Nashville Predators and the city folk and the local businesses would be very, very excited about that. I love that conversation. What would be best for the city of Nashville business-wise? And just from a product standpoint, how good is the entertainment going to be in the NCAA tournament? If you're telling me you've got a North Carolina-Kentucky second-round matchup and a Louisville-Auburn second-round matchup, I think people are doing cartwheels right now in the big important people are doing cartwheels thinking about that.
Is there any doubt that this arena would be sold out for those games? 20,000
strong?
Well,
the problem is with Kentucky, no. The Kentucky-North Carolina pod, absolutely not. There'd be no problem with that. The question I had, like, NCAA tournament matchups aren't normally in front of full crowds. They just aren't. They're just not. They're not buildings that sell out at the full building. Kentucky would come to this building because they've made that trek so many times, and North Carolina's got enough fans that they'll show up. I think Louisville would be a big draw. Auburn, but even Auburn, if Auburn's playing in the third round of the SEC tournament, the building's not sold out. So it's not. Kentucky would be a huge win. That would be the one. Big Blue Nation and the Big Blue Invitational would be huge for the city.
I don't know about you, but I think March Madness in the NCAA tournament was perfect at 64 teams. I'm not a big fan of the whole 68, but it's not that big of an adjustment.
Eh, whatever. It's something to watch on a Tuesday night.
It is. It's still the most, to me, the most complete, perfect postseason format that you have in sports. But you mentioned about not selling out stadiums. Do you think we should actually get to a point where someday soon – the first couple of rounds are played on a home court?
I don't know. I think people – we value the road win so much when it comes to resume, right? When we're talking about the NCAA tournament, the road win is such this big, important thing. You go on the road into Fog Allen, into Rupp Arena, into Cameron Indoor, and you win a road game against a great team. That's never the thing you have to face in the tournament. Like, you don't have to face that situation in the tournament. What you face is, like – a split crowd with four teams, you know, with a few thousand empty seats. Like, that's really sort of what the NCAA tournament atmosphere feels like until you get to the Elite Eight. Once you get to the Elite Eight, I think it starts to change a little bit. It becomes more – there's more on the line, and the game – the action on the court is fantastic. I don't think they're ever going to move it off neutral sites. But it is not the same as if Rupp Arena was hosting Kentucky versus North Carolina in the second round. That place would be going bonkers.
Six new mock drafts are out. What is more important – surrounding Marcus Mariota with as many weapons as possible, or getting a pass rusher or two to get after Deshaun Watson, Andrew Luck, and the AFC South quarterbacks? We will discuss that next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.